Let me remind you guys that Sports Talk on the Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays. With the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus, watch your local NFL game every Sunday on CBS, Paramount Plus, all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get things going this season. I want to read to you guys a text that we got earlier in the show. Why we got this is we were talking about Hollywood Brown, and Hollywood said that he feels there is extra pressure on him to step up because Rashee Rice is out for this game due to suspension.
No, not really. I mean, we know what we could do. You know, when guys go down, it's next man up. When I went down, it's next man up. And that's our mentality throughout the whole team. So for us, it's just doing what we do.
So that was Hollywood Brown. In fact, he said he doesn't feel the extra pressure. Let me correct myself there. I don't want to speak incorrectly of what his quote was. Someone texted in and said, "C-Dot, I think that Juju is the most important player while Rice is out. He has to run the tough routes over the middle and move the chains." I don't want to start the season with negativity. Every team is 0-0. The Chiefs are the best team in the AFC, so I don't mean to come at this place from a negative place. I think that Juju is 100% done. 100%. I think he can maybe give you like one or two games that kind of matter. I'm not counting on Juju giving you a whole lot this season. Last year, for example, when the Chiefs desperately could have used Juju Smith-Schuster. Remember all the wide receiver injuries that they had last year? I mean, they essentially didn't have Rashee Rice for the final 4 months of the season. They didn't have Hollywood Brown for the first 4 months of the season. It was so bad, the Chiefs had to go trade for DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know if the Chiefs make that trade if they have a healthy, productive Juju Smith-Schuster. Juju had two games last season in which he had more than 35 yards receiving. He had one massive game against the Chargers, or excuse me, against the Saints. He had 7 catches for 130 yards. He also played really well in their game against Buffalo. He had 2 catches for 60 yards. Those were the only two games last season in which he had more than 35 yards receiving. So I'm telling you, if you were counting on Juju to be this X factor, kind of pick up the slack while Rashee Rice is gone, where was that last year when Rashee Rice was gone? They didn't have that last year. If anything, the person I think you're talking about, I think that can be Tyquan Thornton. I think Thornton's got a chance to really fit and work in this offense. You started your career with New England. You didn't have a great offensive-minded head coach. You didn't have a great offensive coordinator. You didn't have a great quarterback. Like, sometimes where you get drafted is situational. You got drafted to a bad situation to be a young wide receiver is that New England offense that has been one of the most talent-depleted offenses in the last 5-6 years or so. You now get a chance for a rebirth in your career. You go to Kansas City. You're not going to be the focal point. You're not the second round pick anymore with these massive expectations that have been placed on you. You can just go to Kansas City, fit in, and play ball. I think that Tyquan could potentially be that kind of guy. I just think it's over for Juju. That sounds bad to say for a player who is 28 years old, but I think Juju's body has completely given up since that year in Kansas City. I mean, that was a big-time year a couple of years ago. I mean, Juju had 933 yards receiving. Since then, since that season, so the season I'm talking about, they win the Super Bowl, he has the big play in the Super Bowl, you guys know what I'm talking about. Since then, Juju Smith-Schuster has had 490 yards receiving since then. So he's just not a guy that I'm counting on coming into this season. Maybe he has one game that just kind of pops up out of nowhere that just completely catches you off guard. But if you're counting on Juju to be a consistent, reliable, productive player for the Chiefs, I think you've made a mistake.
I guess it's important to note what done means, because I agree with you. If the version of done means that, hey, he's a guy that he'll probably have, 350 to 500 this year, and he's wide receiver 4 – and maybe a game pops up where he's 9 for 76, but generally speaking, he is to this team what, you know, He's like Noah Gray type of stats, maybe less than Noah Gray. Maybe that's the comparison. If those are your expectations, then I think you're in line. But I agree with you. If you are the texter, and we are responding to the texter who feels like Juju's going to be the one who steps up, then I think you're wrong, and I think you need to understand that his days of being a difference-making wideout are done. I think sometimes we have these arguments, and people just get caught in the semantics of it. Oh, you said washed. Here's what I think. What? He's done if you think that he is a frontline receiver and going to be something that makes the Chiefs offense dynamic in Rice's absence.
I don't think he's a second-tier receiver anymore in the National Football League. Like, I don't think he can be DeMarcus Robinson anymore in the league. Someone on the text line says, you're high, C-Dot. Juju was going off in the first three games. No, he wasn't. In the first three games of last season, Juju Smith-Schuster had 17 yards receiving. He had 17 yards receiving in the first month of the season last year. He didn't have a catch against Baltimore. He didn't have a catch against Cincinnati. He had 17 yards against Atlanta, and he didn't have a catch against the Chargers. All of this stuff is on Google. No, he was not going off in the first three games of the season. Someone else says, Juju was hurt. I think he'll do great this year as long as he stays healthy. I don't mean this with any disrespect towards Juju. I don't think that Juju can stay healthy. I just don't think he's a healthy player anymore in the league. I think sometimes a flaw that we have with players is we think that all of them are going to make it till they turn 30, 31 years old, and that's when they decline. I think that Juju has always been hurt in his career, and his body is just giving out earlier than other players. That contract that he signed with the Chargers, with the Patriots, it was a bad contract. He then came back to Kansas City, and he's been a good veteran presence. He's a good guy to have on your team. I just don't think he's the guy that can help you pick up the slack. I really think that's Tyquan Thornton. I think you were either looking for Tyquan Thornton to be that guy, or you're looking for one of the other tight ends to be that player. You're looking at Robert Tonyan to be that guy. You're looking at Jared Wiley to be that player, or you're looking at Noah Gray. Juju Smith-Schuster, he's just not an offensive player that I would count on. I just don't know how – I don't know what, based on the last two seasons of playing football, I don't know what reason he has given you to think that in the next handful of games, the next six games, he can be a guy that gets you 40 or 50 yards consistently offensively. Again, he only had two of those games last season.
Who do you think has more left in their body? Because I'm about to name two guys who are nearing the end. Juju or DeAndre Hopkins? Because that's basically basically what the Chiefs had this offseason. I know the money's not one for one, but it wasn't like D-Hop went and broke the bank with the Ravens, and Juju Smith-Schuster definitely didn't break the bank here. So, like, two veteran wideouts that you think have very little left in their body. I would imagine most Chiefs fans, after watching last season, realize D-Hop doesn't have much of anything left. If you think D-Hop has more than Juju, that shows you how little Juju has left in his body.
I'll put a bet on it right now. I think that Breshad Smith has more receiving yards this season than Juju Smith-Schuster does. I'll put a bet on it right now. Last year, Juju had 231 yards receiving. He had fewer receivings than Samaje Perine did last year. I'll put a bet on it right now that he'll have fewer yards than Breshad Smith does. I'll take anybody's action if you want to make that bet right now with Juju Smith-Schuster.
I wouldn't take it, but only because I don't know how much Breshad's going to get run.
I think they're going to use him how they've used. I think they're going to use him how they've used that role. And that guy, that Jerick McKinnon, Samaje Perine role, that guy will have somewhere between 300 to 400 yards receiving this year. I think they really like Breshad Smith, and I don't think that they've really shown us all of what his role is going to be. He, to me, seems like one of those offensive players that the Chiefs have that he will be a much better asset for them later in the year than now. We see this happen with Chiefs rookie offensive players all the time. They get off to a really slow start in weeks 1 through 5. They have this game in week 6 in which they figure it out. He has 6 catches for 42 yards and a touchdown. And then that's kind of the jumping off point for his career to kind of get things going. I mean, the last 4 or 5 Chiefs pass catchers that have kind of figured it out, they've all followed that. That's how Tyreek got started. You remember his career of how it was? That's how he got going. That's how Xavier Worthy was. That's how Rashee Rice was. That's how Mecole Hardman was. If you're somebody that they kind of find value for, you usually can expect that player to kind of figure it out close to Halloween, and then they'll be a very valuable member the rest of the way. That's what I think Breshad Smith is going to be. I think he's going to end up being that kind of player.
I think Smith, if I were legitimately running the handicapping on that bet, I think Smith is the smarter bet, because I think Smith, as the season goes on, will get more and more run. But I think they're going to be pretty similar. I think it's 250 to 350 for either of them. And if you are a person on the text line right now taking Juju over Bashard Smith, you're going to be sweating that bet in week 16, 17, 100%.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely going to be sweating that bet. We can talk more about the Chiefs wide receiver room. Here is Andy Reid earlier today talking about the status of Hollywood Brown.
Look good out there. Run around and, you know, he's getting the game and play. So, but he's, as far as practice goes, he's done everything.
Yeah, that's the guy that I'm really looking for. If you were telling me over the next 6 weeks, who do the Chiefs need to step up? Who do they need to play well? Who's going to be the difference maker? It's Hollywood Brown. I don't think that we have ever seen health. The Chiefs, at no point in this contract, have they had healthy regular season or postseason Hollywood Brown. I know he's not 100% healthy now, but this is as close to 100% healthy that he's been at any time playing for the Kansas City Chiefs. He was coming off a significant injury in the later part of the season. I don't care how good of a player you are. It's hard to just be dropped in week 15 of the NFL season and be expected to be a big producer. And I think you can see that from them last year. He has been healthy for a majority so far of this offseason. If you were excited about Hollywood Brown coming into last season, if you were excited that the Chiefs brought Hollywood Brown back for another year and you think that he has a role in this offense, man, now's the time to show it. You got a healthy offensive line. You got Travis Kelce in the middle of the field. You got Xavier Worthy on the other side. You got Isaiah Pacheco back. You're not asking Hollywood to go out and be a savior for you offensively. Can you be that guy we're talking about? Can he have 5 catches for 57 yards and a touchdown on Friday night? I think he can be that player. That's what you signed him to be. That was the expectation when you signed him from the free agent contract leaving the Arizona Cardinals. We got Vern coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll talk a little bit of Royals baseball. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Catch Hall of Famer Denny Matthews every Monday at 3.
And gone, Bobby Witt.
On your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. Coming up in just a bit, we are going to be joined by Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. It is still baseball season. The Royals are just 2.5 games back of the third wild card spot. They have a very, very winnable series at home against the Los Angeles Angels. I'm heading to the game later today. Rob, you know I love a good Tuesday buck night. You know that. If they got a game on Tuesday and it's good weather outside, you can count on me being out there at Kauffman Stadium. So I will be there today. We'll see if the Royals win. They have a home series against the Angels. I don't even know who's pitching today for the Royals. Who's on the mound today for the
Michael
Royals?
Michael Lorenzen.
Okay, they got a chance then to win that game. Hopefully they don't got Seth Lugo out there. You know, he'd be getting beat around.
You've gone to more Tuesday dollar dog nights than Cole Reagans has starts this year.
I mean, I wish the Royals just had a season ticket package that only included the Tuesday games. I would just buy that package. That's the one I need to go to. I go to the Tuesday games and the important games. Like, they got a Friday, you know, Cole Reagans going up against. Yeah, I'll be at that game. Jack Caglione Day, which happened to be on a Tuesday. I'll be at those games. But, like, if I'm thinking about going on a Wednesday, why wouldn't I just go the day before? The hot dogs are a dollar. Sign me up.
That Tuesday they play the Mariners. Oh, you're going to have a time. It's when the two worlds collide.
I already have my tickets. What are you talking about? I already got my tickets. I already asked for those. I asked for those weeks ago. Please give me those tickets. I can't wait. I got that whole series already wrapped up. I can't wait to be at Royals and Mariners. Can you answer this question for me? Text line, maybe you guys can answer this question for me. I know that you guys would never, ever challenge the infinite wisdom of Brett Veach and the Kansas City Chiefs. They can do no wrong, and I understand that. Why is Mike Pinnell not on this team? Can you help me understand the roster construction part of it? I mean, this is a guy that has played very valuable snaps for you, was just running with the ones. He's great in the locker room. He's not making any money. Can you answer to me why they let Mike Pinnell go? Because I still don't really have a good answer. I mean, I've heard Brett Veach explain it. It doesn't really make any sense to me. That's a good rotational piece for you that fits your team, that fits your lineup. I don't really understand why we let Mike Pinnell. Why do we let him just go play for the Bengals? I don't understand.
Now, it's possible I'm taking the party line here, but But is the answer to the question that Omar Norman Lott's ahead of schedule? Like, if Omar Norman Lott is the player they think he is, and they drafted him in the second round, they think he's a player. They don't think he's some rotational, hey, we found something kind of nice in the sixth round. They used a premium draft pick on defensive tackle. If Omar Norman Lott is up to speed, ready to go, healthy, 100%, all the stuff, then yeah, it makes sense to move on from Mike Pinnell. That's the only logic I have, because if Omar Norman Lott isn't up to par yet, then you should have kept Mike Pinnell. But I think the answer to your question is Omar Norman Lott and his development, and they think he's ready. And it's go time now. You're 3 days away. Time to prove if you are or aren't ready. Because I know this, Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers, they're going to run the ball. So let's see if he can be a Mike Pinnell type of run stuffer.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they just spent the first round pick on a running back, Omarion Hampton. I think he's going to be, you remember, he was one of the running backs I really liked coming out of college. I'm not sure if Najee Harris is going to play. Are we certain? Is Najee Harris going to play? I know he had the little firework injury, but he's back to practice. I don't know if they got him like a Slick Rick eye patch. I don't know what the plan is for him. Do we know if Najee Harris is playing? Fantasy football people, do you know if Najee is playing?
I have not seen an official stance on Najee playing or not.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
Do you know a fun fact about Najee Harris, though? He
rapped Trap Queen.
He once was a verbal commit to Kansas.
Oh, okay, here you go. I thought you were going to tell me.
A lot of people are talking about it.
I thought you were going to tell me
he was the. A lot of people are talking about it.
He had My Way featuring Drake. That's what I thought you were about
to
tell
me. It is probably the top story around Najee Harris. His eye? Nope. His health? Uh-uh. He once committed verbally to Kansas. David Beatty, Kansas, too. People forget about that.
I know we got Vern coming up here in a little bit. I wish you had been here on Friday when we talked about this and the text line wasn't working, so I couldn't get a clear answer. So now we can talk about this for a little bit and then we'll move forward. I promise we won't spend a lot of time on this. You play fantasy football, right, Rob?
I do. I had my draft over the weekend.
How do you guys handle the financial portion of things? I'm guessing you're playing it for money. Like, we're not just playing it to play it, you know? I'm playing fantasy football. I'm taking this time out of my life, my day, when I could be doing other things, and I have invested it into playing fantasy football. I put my 50 up. You put your 50 up. Maybe you play for more stakes, lesser stakes, whatever it is. Are you guys collecting that money before you play? Are you getting it on the back half? Because one of the most challenging things in life to me seems like you got to track down your Uncle Bill for a $200 buy-in when he is the owner of a 3-7 fantasy football team. It just seems like that's just a hassle that I don't really want in my life. Bill, Unc, you know you owe me this money. Why do I got to now go through channels? I got to ask your wife. Now it's got to be some friction between you and I at the Thanksgiving function because you haven't sent in your dues for playing fantasy football. How do you guys handle the money? I genuinely want to know. 913-586-7965. You guys know I don't play fantasy football. One of the reasons I don't play fantasy football would be this. Just pay your money from the very, very beginning of the season. But I'm guessing, I'm going out on a limb. Every year there's one or two guys that are in your fantasy league that you got to really hunt them and track them down. You got to turn into Liam Neeson and just get your money back. How do you guys handle this?
So I can't speak for everyone's league, but I will speak for mine personally. And I'm going to credit my league commissioner here because I like the way he does this. I like the way we handle things. I'm sure the text line will say that it's a bad system or whatever. So be it. I like what my commissioner does. If you don't pay your entry fee by draft time, he doesn't unlock your team and let you into the draft. It's that simple. You're basically not in the league that year. So if we have a league of 14. If four people don't get their league dues paid by game time, suddenly it's a 10-person league. That simple. You ain't in. You are either paying the penalty or you're not in at all. Now, I believe, and I've never been late, you can pay a fine and be in later after the draft or as the draft is starting, whatever have you. But it's pretty simple. Your team remains iced out until you've paid me my money. So Venmo, check, PayPal, courier, however you get it done, you ain't playing in our league unless you get your payment in by draft time.
Okay, so you're saying is, I'm seeing a lot of other people. All my leagues, they pay before the draft. I'm the commissioner. We have a rule. You don't pay, you don't play. So a lot of people, that's the stance you guys are taking. All right, I don't know how this works. I'm just trying to make sure. Because that's the rule that I would have. Hey, man, come on now. Like, why are we doing this? I'm not chasing you down. This person here said they do late fees. They got their fantasy football league like Blockbuster. They got like Hollywood Video. Everybody pays the site instead of a person or the commish. You can even add late fees or lock rosters if fees are late or unpaid. That's the thing. I got to reach a business agreement with my 12 friends and family. That's what I'm saying. Now, let's handle this from the beginning. I don't want to do this. Listen to this. I never heard this before. Me and my friends collect at the start of the season. We invested into Bitcoin. Then the winner gets it all, and the second place gets their money back. And I had to be in y'all league. Y'all forward thinking over there in that league. How much is your league, Rob, if you mind me asking how much it is to buy
into your
league?
We're a 50 a pop league.
How many teams you got? 8, 12?
14.
14. I'm serious in there.
Mm-hmm.
How's your draft? How'd you do?
I felt good about my draft, which is the kiss of death.
Okay, well, yeah, you're done. You're cooked.
It was actually kind of funny. Yesterday, I was doing my draft, sitting there, and my wife's watching TV. She's like, how's the draft going? I'm like, I love my team. I'm screwed.
Yeah,
no. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
It's like, I know you don't do brackets, but like, your Selection Sunday comes out, you make your picks, you're like, God, I feel really good about my bracket this year. You know that thing's in shambles in 5 minutes. Don't even enjoy it. I walked away, I got Ja'Marr Chase without having to waste number one overall pick to do it. I felt incredible about it. And then I know I'm going to come in 14th. I know the punishment's coming.
Well, good luck to you. I'm pulling for you, my brother. I certainly want you to do well. Coming up in a little bit, Vern is going to join us on the show. There is one thing that I can 100% guarantee for Friday. I don't know who's going to win. I'm telling you that I have already taken the Chiefs minus 3. So I can only tell you what I've done. I've taken the Chiefs minus the 3, and I took Isaiah Pacheco for an anytime touchdown. I think they're going to try to run the ball and establish him and get him back and get him feeling good about himself. So I took Isaiah Pacheco to score, and I took the minus the 3. But the Chiefs could lose, right? I mean, the Chargers are a double-digit win football team, and anything can happen, right? Anything can happen. It's football. If there's one thing I am 100% certain will happen, it's that the field will be absolute crap on Friday. You know it, and I know it. There is no debating this. There is no question that the field will be an issue for both teams on Friday. We have this little board in our office where every segment is mapped out. And then we have another board that, you know, this is the day that Mahomes plays. Like, we have two boards to, like, let you know, what to plan for. So we kind of build the show that way. I have already written down 2:45 on Monday, complain about the field, because I already know it's going to be an issue. Like, that's a segment that's already done. It's in the books. I've already just go ahead and I've already done the homework when it comes to that segment. I don't even got to see the game. I can't wait to complain about player safety on Friday at 2:45 because we know the field isn't going to be in good condition. How do they keep pulling this on us? How many times do they go over and play these international games on these soccer fields and they're not nearly in the condition that they need to be to play an NFL football game? And you got over $1 billion worth of players and contracts on this field, running and jumping and cutting and doing all of these things, and you got them playing on a 3 out of 10 grade quality field. We already know that's going to be the case. We already know.
So wasn't it really bad last year, too? Like,
Jordan Love got hurt last year. That's exactly how Jordan Love got hurt. I'm telling you right now, you already know. I'm telling you, you already know. I'm serious. Text line 913-586-7965. You know that I'm right. There's one thing we can go ahead and pencil down. Pencil it. We will complain about the field on Monday because it will be an absolute terrible condition. That is the one standard when it comes to all of these games that are played internationally. Let's go to Kauffman Stadium right now to be joined by our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. Vern, how you doing, man?
I'm very well. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. Happy to have you on the show. I know the Royals lost the weekend series against the Detroit Tigers, but if you look at the standings, they actually gained a little bit of ground. They are now 2.5 games back of the third wild card spot.
Yeah. 25 to play, 2.5 back. Certainly not ideal, but you'll take it for the hole that they dug themselves in the month of June. So the fact that they're here, I think, speaks to just how great the rotation was in the first half of the season and speaks to just how deep the lineup has been since the All-Star break.
I mean, we've been talking this entire time about Seattle and the Royals catching up to them, and that certainly is still part of the conversation. They have that series coming up in just a couple of weeks against them. But now, fast forward, The Texas Rangers are now a team that we need to worry about. They won, I believe, their last five games. They are now very much in this mix of who's going to grab it. It looks like right now we're talking about three teams fighting for one spot.
Yeah, sure. You know, to me, the Rangers have already lost their ace in Nate Eovaldi. They've put Corey Seager and Marcus Semien on the IL. No doubt they're battling. But I don't think they have enough to track down the Seattle Mariners. They have a terrific manager, of course, a Hall of Famer in Bruce Bochy, who's going to work his magic. And, you know, I'm impressed the fact that they've been able to rattle off six straight wins and now find themselves a full game in front of the Royals. But, no, I'm not a believer in the Rangers. You know, to me, Seattle's the team. Seattle is, well, if I'm being honest, nobody deserves a third wild card spot. There shouldn't be a third wild card spot, but Seattle is clearly the best of the bunch. But anything can happen in baseball. Maybe the Royals can get red hot and, you know, be that team that we see every single season celebrating inside the clubhouse after they knock off a division champion and they're doing the postgame interview talking about how we've been playing playoff baseball for a month and a half now. This is nothing new for us. That's what it's going to take. The Royals need to be the hottest team in baseball from here on out if they're going to play more baseball into October.
I don't think that this story gets nearly enough conversation. I think that's just largely because of the sport. I mean, we are talking about a franchise that at one point had Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, and Albert Pujols all on the team at the exact same time, and Mike Trout has played in three postseason games in his entire career. There has not been a franchise in American sport that has squandered the talent more than the Los Angeles Angels.
Yeah, hard to argue with that. I think it's impossible to argue with that. And that, to me, shows the value of pitching, right? You can have two of the five greatest players since the turn of the century and have nothing to show for it. And sure, I mean, I'm not even talking about Pujols. That was just Trout and Ohtani. You want to throw in what Pujols was while he was with the Halos. I mean, you know it. So we all know it. That's what made it so puzzling was how do you not put a quality pitching staff around Mike Trout? Okay, it's difficult to draft and develop. You're in Los Angeles. Go throw some money around. Now, they did when you talk about C.J. Wilson, but that was like 12 years ago. When was the last time the Angels made a big splash when it comes to free agent pitching? Maybe it's not a desirable... How is it not a desirable place? It's Southern California. No, it's been an all-time fumble by Moreno and the rest of that organization.
It also just doesn't make any sense because as somebody who has been to Los Angeles and I've seen their stadium, haven't been to a game, but I've seen it from the outside, it's like 10 minutes from Disney World.
Right,
that's what just makes our Disneyland. That's what just makes absolutely no sense about it. Like, it is across the street from the most popular family place. Like, you can't sell anybody on the,
right. Hey,
the weather's good, we'll pay you well, and hey, why don't you come spend time with your family? Like, their failures over the last decade, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I'm with you. And yeah, all the native Californians that ultimately make it to the big leagues, you would imagine you could entice a few of them to come back home. And yeah, you're the little brother. You know, are you Anaheim? Are you Los Angeles? All we know is you're not the Dodgers. Okay, that's fine. The Mets aren't the Yankees, and they throw money around like it's going out of style. They compete. And, you know, I mean, to bring it back to the Royals, I think that's what we've enjoyed most about this new era under John Sherman is that they refuse to wave the white flag. They are competing consistently. You had the evaluation season of 2023, but once you inked Bobby Witt Jr., it's been foot on the gas pedal ever since, and I have to imagine that's going to continue until Bobby, if he does ever leave. That's the only way this team ever retreats, in my opinion.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider for a couple of more minutes. The Royals are 2.5 games back in the third wild card spot. Looking to tonight's game, looking to some of the roster moves that the Royals have made, the Royals have called up Carter Jensen, the local hometown kid, also Jack Caglione back. What do you see their role being for the Royals as we head into September?
Yeah, I see Carter Jensen as a third catcher, really. You know, maybe a late game option. I don't think you're going to see his name in the starting lineup all that often. Jack Caglione, I think you'll see a little bit more often in the starting lineup than you will Jensen, but Mike Yastrzemski is going to get his shots against lefties moving forward. I think he's earned that. Adam Frazier, same thing for him. Jack Caglione plays first base or right field. Mike Yastrzemski is going to be damn near your everyday right fielder. Vinny Pasquantino, your everyday first baseman. So, you know, Jack will be able to mix in there as the designated hitter on occasion. And as far as Carter Jensen, when Salvi's not behind the dish, I think you're going to see Luke Maley. But if you have both of them in the lineup and you end up pinch running for one of them late in the game, that's how I think we see Carter Jensen behind the dish. But great experience. You were going to need to add him to the 40-man roster this offseason anyway. The Kansas City kid, the Park Hill High School native coming home. Not in the lineup tonight. Neither is Jack Caglione. As a matter of fact, Jensen on his way to catch a bullpen right now. We'll have a chance to talk with him coming up a little bit later, and you'll hear that conversation on the pregame show tonight at 5:30.
Vern, I'll give you $5 if you tell me where Park Hill High School is.
Northland.
Okay, all right. You got to send me your Venmo. I didn't know what your answer was going to be. I had no clue how you were going to answer that question.
Man, that's like the one spot in this entire city that I would have gotten correct just because Carter Jensen went there. And I think Jay Binkley probably let me know that because, you know, Bink reps the Northland.
This kind of feels to me like an old school college football season from this. You remember how it was back in 1994. Like, there was no margin for error. Like, if you lose this game, your entire season is over. You know, this feels like one of those series where you just can't tell me you're a playoff team if you lose a home series to the Los Angeles Angels. Like, it is so much about keeping up with the other team. This is a big week for the Royals. You got 3 games at home against the Angels. You got 3 games at home against the Twins. You got to go 4-2, 5-1 at a minimum to keep this dream alive.
Yeah, and 4-2 really feels like you're just kicking the can down the road, and it's just going to be more of the same. And this team is what we thought they were, which is at times the squad we thought we were going to see in 2025, and at times the team that forces you to pull your hair out. Yeah, I mean, you got to start sweeping someone, right? We're running out of time. We got less than, 4 weeks left in the season, 25 games to go. You have the Phillies and the Guardians and the Mariners and some difficult to Toronto Blue Jays coming up. Man, if you're not handling the Angels and the Twins, and I don't care who they're throwing against you, right? Twins, you're going to see Joe Ryan. You're going to see some quality arms. This Angels team and this Angels rotation's all sorts of beat up tonight. C-Dot, it's a 24-year-old that's skipping over AAA. He's a soft-tossing lefty making his big league debut tonight. How does that hit the ears?
Who had a worse weekend, Arch Manning or Jordan Hudson?
Arch Manning, yeah. Arch Manning, man, he is. I didn't watch much of it, but I haven't heard anybody say anything nice about that young man.
That is our Royals insider, Josh Vern. You're joining us on the show. The Royals, they have a game today against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. You can hear that right here on 96.5 The Fan. Vern, we usually have you on Friday. I think you understand why you will not be on the show this Friday, but I look forward to catching up with you after this homestand is over.
Hashtag talk Chiefs.
Absolutely. That is our guy, Josh Vern, here joining us on the show. Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about Bill Belichick. Boy, was last night rough. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk about the AFC and get you ready for Friday's game between the Chiefs and the Chargers. I think what we're going to do at the end of hours is just give you some of my thoughts from college football from this past weekend. You know what? I have to admit something to you guys that I flip-flopped on you without really a notice. All summer, I had picked Clemson to win against LSU. And as I was sitting there on the FanDuel app on Saturday, deciding what I wanted to do if I wanted to place a bet down, I was like, you know what? Let me look something up. I wanted to look at the last handful of games from Clemson against teams outside of their conference. because my feeling was, I don't know, man. I'm starting to have a hunch. So I looked this up. Since Clemson last won the national championship and their last eight games against ranked opponents outside of the ACC, they had lost. And then I started really thinking. I was like, well, who do I think is the better team? I think LSU's better than them, and I'm only picking Clemson because they're at home. I can't do that. And in that moment, I switched my pick, and I picked LSU to win the game. Now, I'm not here to pat myself on the back that I got it right. You're going to get some right. You're going to get things wrong. But I noticed a couple of things on Saturday. Clemson is not the Clemson that you or I remember anymore. Ranked preseason top five, able to stand up and hold their own against any team in the sport. That's not the Clemson that we have anymore. Lost on Saturday at home to LSU. Go back to last season. Got blown out in the season opener by Georgia. Lost at the end of the season in South Carolina. Lost in the first round of the college football playoff. When Clemson plays teams outside of the ACC and non-basketball schools, because that's what they do. Right now, they're good for beating up on basketball schools. Louisville, NC State, Wake Forest, Duke, North Carolina. When they play those teams, man, Clemson looks like the big bad bully that we remember for that 7-year run or so. When they've played anybody else outside of that, that's just not who they've been. And that moment, I had a change of heart when it came to LSU and just what Clemson has turned into. The other thing that I thought is, I don't see what they want me to see with Cade Klubnik. If you go on a lot of these mock drafts and predictions, I mean, number one, you got to scroll past Arch Manning. I'm here telling you that kid, he ain't a top 10 pick yet. He might be a top 10 pick next year, but right for this upcoming draft in the 2026 draft, wherever it's going to be held, I don't think Arch Manning needs to be participating. I think he should stay in college and season his game for as long as he can. But I'm guessing you would see Cade Klubnik's name on that list. I don't see what they want me to see. The same way I'm talking about how Clemson hasn't played well against those top flight competitions, man, neither really has he. He completed 50% of his passes on Saturday. And Rob, you know I'm really big on completion percentage. They had three consecutive drives where you got to get points. You got to get back on the board. Clemson didn't score on any of those drives. I'm telling you that a lot of people are going to try to tell you that Cade Klubnik is a first-round pick. I wouldn't listen to those people. He's a day two, day three selection. That's how it comes off to me. I have never seen what they want me to see. Now, Garrett Nussmeier, I think he has to be considered to be the favorite to be the number one overall pick. That was a big-time drive that he put together. On the road, in Death Valley, heading into the fourth quarter, tie ball game. I got to put together one drive to put my team in a position to win, and I thought he answered the call and made plays every single time. So I came away really impressed with LSU. I think they deserve to be the third-ranked team in college football if you care about rankings this early on, and I think they have to be considered as the early favorite in the SEC. You want to take them, you want to take Georgia, you take your pick. We obviously got a lot more college football to get to. Let's talk about Bill Belichick. Oh, boy. I don't care what you do in your free time. I really don't care what you do in your free time. He and Jordan Hudson are not hurting anybody. They seem to be two people that love each other. And again, they're not really bothering me. They're not really bothering you. But you guys know my philosophy. I follow the Roy Williams school of thought. You can do whatever dunk you want on fast breaks as long as you make it. If you want to do a throw it off the backboard, shot clock, 360, 720, between the legs, around, I don't care. Just make it. And if you make the dunk, great. The place is going to go crazy. If you miss or the ball slips out of your hand, you don't got to worry about it because you're going to be sitting next to me for the rest of the game. I don't care what Jordan Hudson and Bill Belichick do. You are two consenting adults. If you want to sit there and watch Love Island with this young girl and paint her toenails and she tells you stories you don't care about from her friends on Snapchat and Instagram and TikTok, have at it. You're able to do that. But now you're messing up the money. They got embarrassed on Monday night. Embarrassed on Monday night. Everybody is now making fun of you. TCU, you know how bad it's got to be for TCU's social media page to be dog walking you for hours the way that they were? Everybody getting their jokes off about you and your relationship. At one point, I saw a tweet that said when the score was 41-7, it read, ironically, this was Bill Belichick's age when Jordan Hudson was 7 years old. The rest of us are making fun of you. The Jordan Hudson thing, it really goes how this experiment goes. If North Carolina wins 9-10 games this year, it'll be like a ha-ha, funny. If they end up going 4-8 or 3-9 this year and they end up being a laughingstock and embarrassing program because of Bill Belichick and he looks unfocused, disorganized, that was the thing that really jumped out to me. Just they just didn't seem prepared. And if there's one thing that you can always say about North Carolina, or excuse me, about Bill Belichick coach teams, is they always just seem to out-execute their opponents. Once they got past their first 15 plays, it was God knows what was going on. So, Bill, I'm here to tell you, you better tighten up. Because if you want to start having some uncomfortable conversations about Bill Belichick, those uncomfortable conversations are right around the corner about his coaching resume. I've seen Andy Reid do it with multiple coach or with multiple quarterbacks. I've seen him do it with McNabb. I've seen him do it with Alex Smith. I've seen him do it with Mahomes. I've seen him do it with a bunch of different individuals. I ain't never seen Bill do that before. And if Bill is about to have a 3-9 on his resume as the head coach in North Carolina, oh, I'm telling you right now, you can already see a resignation due to health issues. You can see that already loading up if this thing doesn't go well. That it could not have gone worse for a team than it went for North Carolina on Monday. I mean, an absolute beatdown. And we already know the internet, they were sharpening their knives. They can't wait to make fun of you. And when you go out there and you lay an egg like that in front of a who's who, anybody who was graduated from North Carolina was at that game. They got Michael Jordan out to a basket, to a football game. They had Mia Hamm out there. They had, if you graduated from North Carolina, they had you on the sideline. Mike ain't donating to that nonsense. Bill, I'm telling you, good luck, man. That's what I'm here to tell you. Good luck. Can you imagine? I'm sorry. Bill was 41 when she was 7 years old. Some of you right now, you're in your early 40s and you have a 7-year-old kid. Can you imagine if I told you, hey, one day you're going to date one of her friends? You would look at me like I'm sick. That's what Bill Belichick is doing. That's crazy. Nuts. Yes. Hey, that little 7-year-old girl that come over for play dates. Hey, in about 20 years, you and her are going to be romantically involved with each other. You look at me like I was crazy. That's what Bill's currently engaged in. It's nuts. Absolutely nuts. Coming up on the other side, let's get back to the Chiefs. We'll talk about the AFC with the Chiefs having an important AFC West matchup against the Chargers. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.